From the KUNV studios in Las Vegas, you're listening to Our Metropolis, a weekly interview program with people who are changing the face of Las Vegas. And now, here is your host.
This is John Katsalamidis, host of this program and the person who presides over the multimedia blog The Cats Report on LasVegasSun.com and LasVegasWeekly.com. Our guest this week is a journalist from Washington, D.C., working for Atlantic Monthly, who is documenting stories of economic survival titled Recession Road Trip. During her four-month, 48-state, 10,000-mile journey, she is passing through Las Vegas, and she's with us today. Welcome to the show and to Las Vegas, Christina Davidson.
Hello, John. Thank you for having me.
It's good to see you. What an ambitious and adventurous project you've embarked on. You're about three months in now?
Two and a half months. And you know what? It's even more ambitious than we at first realized.
How so? Well,
you just said 10,000 miles, and I'm just a little bit over halfway, and I'm already up to about 12.
Oh, wow. Wow.
It's a lot more.
Could be double that easily.
Yeah, it's about... Probably about double. And to be honest, my editor's going to hear this, but let's be honest, it's probably going to be a little bit longer than 4 months, too.
Oh, wow.
Maybe just a couple weeks over. 4.5 months is probably
And that was totally, obviously, unanticipated when you charted this path.
Well, you know, we didn't really know what to expect. It's hard when you set for yourself a schedule of three states a week and doing all the photos and doing all the driving and doing all the writing. It's a lot, especially when you have to, in between all that, find somebody who has an interesting story to tell.
Yeah, doing just the purpose for the trip is enough to forget the logistics, just to find the right story
in the right place. Exactly. I can't just walk into any place and write the story of the first person that I meet. It has to be interesting. It has to be compelling. A lot of times it requires a lot of research. So in advance of this trip, we really didn't know how to budget the time or what to expect, how much time it would take to do that. So, the 4 months, that was the plan, but it's always open to going a little bit longer.
Kind of a guide more than anything. Huh? Let's go back to how the project started originally in its first idea phase. How did you come up with the idea, or did somebody else come to you with the idea? And
how did
it go from there?
I came up with the idea. I suppose the kernel of the idea began back last fall. It was last October, and I was hiking in Great Falls, Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C., and my friends and I, we were walking kind of in a remote area, way off the main trails where most people would go, and we happened upon this family that looked like they were camping, but they didn't look like they were camping for fun. I mean, it looked like if you kind of put them through showers, they would look like a J. Crew commercial. But it looked like they hadn't showered for a while. And the kids looked healthy and happy and everything, but the parents looked a little haggard, like they were play camping for the benefit of their kids.
Uh-huh.
And that was the first, I don't know, that was the first thing that that was shocking to me, that I didn't realize that this recession that we kept hearing about on the news was really so bad. And then over the winter, I was rereading Let Us Now Praise Famous Men, which is, a classic book of the Depression by James Agee with photos of Walker Evans. And that's really when I started thinking more and more about doing something along these lines once it got warm enough to, go across the whole country.
So you have the idea. Mm-hmm. And your position in D.C. is kind of a freelance, multifaceted journalist, right?
I'm a writer, and my book editor is really what I do most of the time, and some blogging, and some I organize a lot of charity events, many, many different things.
But the charity underpinnings probably helped you come to the idea, I imagine, of this, right? Seeing and being aware of how people suffer in general anyway.
Right, I think it's probably just part of my personality.
Yeah, exactly. So you take the idea where from that point?
To the Atlantic, straight to the Atlantic. I've written for them before, and I knew it would be something that they'd be interested in, and they were in a phase of developing their web-based content, so it wouldn't be, one big article at the end. I could do a few all along the way, one every day or every other day as fast as I could do it. And they were very receptive to the idea. Mm-hmm. And
so is it a web exclusive project right now, or is it going to be repurposed somehow in print? How's that relationship work?
It's actually the editorial branches are quite separate between the web editorial and the print editorial. And I have discussed kind of casually with my print editor about doing something at the end, but it's kind of in a nebulous idea form. I have to get really further on into the process to really think about what form that would take, what you know, what direction
yeah,
it would
be. Yeah, I guess the thought would be it becomes some kind of retrospective, completely unique four-print, or it mm-hmm. could be something you could pull from the highlights of mm-hmm. of the trip and vignettes, or any which way, I guess. Is that
actually,
the conversation?
Just in the last week, I've started thinking about it, because right now I'm about 25 states in, and the thought that has started, I've been starting to mull over, is this notion that the American dream is under revision right now. Mm-hmm. And I first started thinking about this actually because of a guy who used to live in Las Vegas. And he moved from a 4,900 square foot house in Las Vegas, and him and his wife are now living in a 29-foot travel trailer in Texas, and they love it.
Really?
Love it, love it, love it, yes. And he
What was his position? What did he do in Las Vegas, this person?
He was a gaming manager for a casino.
Okay.
And, they refinanced their house at the peak of the housing bubble. And then once the interest rates started going up, it started tightening and tightening. Mm-hmm. And they didn't quite realize in advance that they were, the way he terms it as a kind of slavery, a kind of bondage that he didn't recognize before, before the shackles were tight. So, they just walked into it. And then once they realized what a burden it was, they just essentially decided to walk away. They didn't even get to the point of foreclosure. Because he had managed to get himself a job in just outside of Dallas, Texas, in a Dave and Buster's. He's a manager of a Dave and Buster's now. So they essentially just sold what they could and left the house.
And that's where he is now, outside of Dallas?
Mm-hmm, outside of Dallas.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
And the thing is, he said, he was raised, as many people were, with this notion of the American dream being you grow up, you go to school, you get a job, you get married, you buy a house, you settle down, you have kids, you retire in that house.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he put it was he finally realized that his father had worked his entire life to build his own prison. And once he kind of released himself from those shackles, he mm-hmm. could finally see it, what a prison he'd been living in. And he doesn't want to go back to that ever again. He's perfectly happy living in his RV because if you don't like your neighbors, you can unhitch it and go somewhere else. If you don't like the scenery out your front door, you can change mm-hmm. it. You can go stay somewhere else for a week. All you have to do is hitch your house up to the truck and start driving.
and drive home, drive mm-hmm. your home, mm-hmm. wherever that is. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's enormously appealing to a lot of people who are feeling fearful about losing their home. I mean, I come from a generation in a climate where everybody was like, you need to own a home. You need to own a home. Mm-hmm. Get home ownership. You'll never regret it.
Mm-hmm.
Now a lot of us are saying, well,
really?
Look what has happened. And you're kind of, it's shackled is a good word for it for a lot of us here in Las Vegas. Obviously, we're a high foreclosure area.
13%.
Yeah. And we're having to reinvent ourselves here in Las Vegas.
I'm sorry, your foreclosure rate, not 13%, it's
9%. Yeah, 9% foreclosure, 13%, 0.1% unemployment, the most recent numbers. We get the numbers mixed up, too.
Yeah, I'm not good with numbers. Which is probably why
you're great with words, though.
My credit's not good enough to ever buy a house anyway, so.
Well, congratulations.
Money's not my thing, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. I think people are less concerned about their credit score right now than they are and just how to get through this particular short period of time. Let's talk about how you charted your course across the country. You get your editors at Atlantic to buy into the idea. Then you have to come up with an idea of how you're going to cross the country in some kind of sensible, logical way mm-hmm. to tell all these stories and give you enough time to report and write. How did that process work?
Well, I looked on the internet, of course, the all-powerful internets. There are a lot of people, I don't know if you knew this, but there's this whole kind of, I suppose you could term it a race of people who do like a 48-state road trip as fast as possible. And so I kind of looked at their map first just to see what way they mm-hmm. went, though I knew that if you did their route, I think it was their routes were about 4,000 miles.
Okay.
But, of course, they didn't end up back in the place that they started. Like,
are they going from east to west?
They kind of do. They kind of start at the east and then end up somewhere in the middle. But they don't go, I started in Washington, D.C., and I'll be ending up back in Washington, D.C., so that's different. And also, I, had to account for the fact that their agenda was simply to put their toe across a state line so they could say they've been there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing something a little bit different. In a lot of places, what I do is there's this wonderful map called the AP Economic Stress Index. You can Google that if you want to look at it. And it breaks down every single state by counties, and you can look at counties based on the economic stress index is a combination of foreclosure and bankruptcy and unemployment, and it tells mm-hmm. you, it can tell you which counties have experienced the greatest difference over the last year, because I strongly wanted to avoid turning this into some kind of poverty tour, because you know they're
the stories of the hopeless.
Yeah,
kind of
I mean, mm-hmm. there's something to, I could write about that, but that's not what this is about.
Mm-hmm.
People who have been poor, who've been struck by poverty for a long time, actually haven't experienced much of a difference as a result of the recession, because they're, you know, they have uh-huh. a lot. I suppose you could say they have a lot less distance to fall.
They're
but also they're
at the economic bottom as
mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But also they know they're also. Some people may not believe this, but more self-sufficient, like that article that you were reading earlier about the Navajo reservation.
Mm-hmm. The most recent posting you had this morning.
Right. They have 40% unemployment on the reservation. That's how it's always been, pretty much. And they rely a great deal on growing their own food and utilizing what government services are available, because they really don't have much economic development on the reservation. So they really haven't overall haven't experienced a great, you know, a great flux as a result of the reservation, as a result of the recession. But I wanted to specifically get those stories of people who are trying to adapt to a completely new world to see how that dramatic change is affecting their outlook.
Right.
About things like the American dream and, you know, how to pay for your kids' clothes and how to feed your family.
Mm-hmm. You've talked about the changing and the morphing of the American dream concept.
Mm-hmm.
That it is changing is probably inarguable, especially through your eyes. Do you know where we're going to end up, how this is going to be? Is the family unit, do you think, going to be altered through this process of economic challenges? Do you think people will be less likely to have families and have the traditional home ownership and all that? Do you think that'll be the next generation?
I think home ownership, I wouldn't be surprised if that became less of an important thing in the future. But in terms of the family unit, actually, there are instances where, because as a result of economic stress and financial difficulties, marriages are being pulled apart. But overall, I tend to think that that affluence is what puts distance between families, because people move away for jobs. They kind of grow apart. Mm-hmm. But when they're struck by economic hardship, I've seen a lot of people moving home or moving to be closer to family so that they can have that support network
uh-huh.
to help with childcare and to help with different, you know, it's really pulling a lot of families together. And I mean, I've heard that from a number of people that I've interviewed, is that one reason why they're actually grateful to have been put through this difficult experience is because it's reminding them of what's important. It's reminding them that when they have nothing else, what they have left is family. And so in one sense, I think that stronger family ties could be a product of the recession.
Right. And you're doing more than one story in each state. You're not doing a story per state. You're doing a couple stories here and there in each state.
Depends on what I find, actually.
Yeah. You leave it open that if you find some good stuff, you might find two great stories in or near New Orleans, where,
just intending on doing one article in New Orleans, but I happen to be sitting mm-hmm. in the office of the Receivables Exchange, which is a new startup in New Orleans. The story about New Orleans is that it's, in the aftermath of Katrina right now, and as companies are closing in other cities across the United States, New Orleans is actually having a kind of a entrepreneurial renaissance.
Hmm.
So many startups are being drawn there because of, in one sense, a lot of them are being drawn because of they want to be a part of the rebuilding of New Orleans. And, you know, it's a historic city. It's a beautiful city, and they want to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's very cheap. It's very cheap. And it has a great quality of life. And so the Receivables Exchange, in fact, I met those people because I overheard them in a coffee shop talking about a bankruptcy. There was an impending bankruptcy, and what they do, what Receivables Exchange does, is it provides financing for small businesses. They can sell their invoices on essentially an eBay kind of online marketplace to get themselves immediate infusion of capital. And I was in their office talking to them when I met Sean Cummings, who is in New Orleans, a major, major New Orleans developer,
right.
who is closely involved in trying to draw new entrepreneurs to New Orleans. And so I'd already had the receivables exchange story. But then once I met Sean, I thought, okay, it's going to have to be two stories from New Orleans.
Uh-huh. And you could, and you have the latitude to do that,
yeah.
to make those decisions on the fly.
That's the great thing about the Atlantic is that they really – they give me some guidance, but for the most part, I'm given complete freedom. I mean, I can write to whatever. Okay, I sometimes write a little bit too long, but really, it's my judgment. What I want to write, I write. And actually, to be honest, if you see a typo or anything, sorry, that's me, because they don't even really edit what I write.
That's so true of online.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It just goes. Yeah. I write, mm-hmm. and it goes.
Yeah, it's a read and react situation. This is our Metropolis. This is John Katzlamitas. With Recession Road Trip, author Christina Davidson. I was going to ask you about how you determine how long you write and how much time you spend in each area. When you come to a place, let's use Las Vegas since you're here now. You showed up
night.
Right? Saturday night. How much time do you have to spend in Las Vegas to find that story?
I'm hoping to find it. I'll be staying here again tonight, and I'm hoping to find someone with an interesting story to tell sometime. Right after I leave here. I need to be on to LA by tomorrow. So,
oh boy.
So I'll be canvassing the city.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, you're under a real deadline.
Three states a week.
Yeah, three. Wow. And how are you moving around? How are you driving a rental car, I guess, right?
Prius.
How are they on the road?
Actually, I'm on my fifth Prius.
Oh, really? And they're all Priuses?
They're all Priuses. Well, it's a rental Prius I keep trading in. The first one had some mechanical problems, and then three I ran through just because I drove so much it got to the point of scheduled maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm on to my fifth one.
So far, what kind of research have you been able to do on Las Vegas, and what direction do you think you're going to go?
I'm hopefully going to track down someone who's either going through foreclosure right now or has already lost their home,
mm-hmm.
because that really seems to be the Las Vegas the story.
Yeah.
Because you do have the highest foreclosure mm-hmm. rate of any metropolitan area in the country.
Yeah, that obviously, yeah, and finding that person, obviously that person's going to have a Vegas-centric story
right.
to tell
right.
about their foreclosure.
Right. That is the challenge about doing this, is deciding in advance the type of story that I want, because then it takes a lot more time to find my way to that person who has that story to tell. I mean, I could walk down the strip today and start walking into casinos or restaurants and asking people. And I've done that before mm-hmm. when I'm falling behind and feel like I just need to get a story, any story. Somebody mm-hmm. tell me a story. I'll just start canvassing until I find somebody who's suffered some kind of downturn as a result of the economy. And if their story is compelling, that's it.
Uh-huh.
I've got my story.
Right.
And sometimes you'd be surprised, but it can happen quite quickly. Once I find that one person, maybe half an hour, 45-minute conversation, snap, snap, snap a few pictures, and mm-hmm. then I'm on the road.
You take your own photos, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. If you could kind of handpick maybe a couple of stories that really stand out as you're halfway through your trip, what would they be? What were a couple of your more emblematic stories? Well, we could talk about the most recent one you did in Arizona.
Right.
That was,
I will say there are two. Okay.
Or the marijuana people in Colorado.
There's so many. Yeah. There's so many. But
they're all good. I mean, they're all good stories.
Right. Let me tell you about one. I don't know if you read the one from Biloxi, Mississippi. Miss Rita, she's the executive director of the Loaves and Fishes.
Day 34, Biloxi, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. And she's a very complex and big-hearted woman. She was homeless about 10 years ago herself and managed to pull herself out of homelessness. And she actually ate at the Loaves and Fishes in Biloxi while she was homeless, and eventually started working there after she got back on her feet and is now the executive director. And she suffers a lot of health problems. Her doctors advised her to stop working, but she just can't because there are more and more people coming who need help. They've had their funding cut, and so she's had her income cut, and she kind of, when I first started talking to her, and in fact, the comment that made me realize that she had a story to tell was when I told her what the kind of thing that I was doing, and she's like, well, here's a story for you. I'm helping the homeless, and I may be homeless myself soon.
Oh, man.
And it's kind of a frightening prospect, but But at the same time, she still works and works and works tirelessly to raise more money to keep the soup kitchen going. And in fact, in the time since she just called me last week to give me an update, because since the story came out, they've gotten quite an influx of donations and they had some matching funds. So they're doing okay right now for a while.
She reminds me a lot of a woman in Las Vegas who we've actually interviewed a few times, who I've gotten to know over the years, named Linda Lara Randall L. Runs a foundation called Straight from the Streets here in Las Vegas, and she even kind of looks like Linda in her photo. And the photo that you have of the loaves and fishes facility, it looks like, it almost looks like a little jail, doesn't it?
The bars on the window.
The bars on the windows and just a single sign up above. So you have a knack for going in and getting embedded into an area.
Right.
Is it harder in Las Vegas? Well, you've not been here long, but it seems like it'd be harder to do that in Las Vegas because it's so spread out as compared to a lot of the cities you've been to. I'm wondering what your step is going to be to find your foreclosure person. I mean, how do you do that?
Well, actually, for Las Vegas, I've been putting out some feelers with a couple of people that I interviewed before down in Texas, like the Michael Babin, the man whose house was foreclosed in Vegas, now living down in Texas. I emailed him to ask, and he's asking his kids if they know anyone who might have a story to tell. And another man that I wrote a story about also in Texas, his name's Anthony Ellington III. He was an electrician on the Fontainebleau project when it shut down. And he moved down to Dallas for a little bit to be closer to family, and then now is actually doing his own what we called the recession road trip. But his is driving around the country looking for work, living in his truck, looking for, you know, union electrician work wherever he can find it. So I emailed him to ask if he knows anyone in Vegas. That was my first step. And actually probably when I leave here, I'll go start looking through Craigslist to see because a lot of times I can find somebody through Craigslist. And if I don't see anything that looks interesting right away, I'll just go out and start walking around and talking to people.
Like with all the technology in the world, it usually comes down to that, doesn't it?
Really, it does.
I mean, yeah, we have all these, you know, where I work here in Las Vegas, we have a lot of new media, young people in new media who know all the technology and all of the bells and whistles, but, you know, it's all about, you know, personal contact to get people to tell you a story, as you keep saying.
No, even, you know, it's funny, the marijuana entrepreneurs were talking about in Colorado.
I'm interested in that story. Yeah, that's a great tale. The marijuana snack kings of the future is the headline.
What's he say? He wants to be the Nabisco of ganja. that's a good capitalist there. I actually found my way to one of the people in that story through someone who follows me on Twitter.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How many followers do you have?
2,500, maybe.
Pretty solid.
20, yeah.
Yeah. And this all started at the beginning of the trip, right? Mm-hmm. Your account, so you've picked up people as you go on the way.
Right. Yeah, I think a lot of pornographers and people who want to sell me real estate in various places.
Yeah, because of all the foreclosure information you're putting out there, maybe.
Right. Yeah.
They track you that way. At the end of this process here, Christina, what's going to be the overarching message will be? I mean, you know, you collect all these stories. Is there something that you're going to find at the end of this?
I don't know. I suppose I'll know at the end.
Yeah.
I'm planning to write a book. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that I find something, because otherwise it'll be a really boring book.
And you're one whose own personal story is one of kind of using the recession as a way to sustain a lifestyle, employment, and do what you love. You must expect that this economic climate is going to remain unchanged through the end of your reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Are you kind of, you know, I almost hate to say counting on that, but I mean, you are expecting that to be the case, right?
I'm fairly optimistic, and I'm expecting it to continue to get very slowly better. But for my purposes, for tracking down stories, they're always good. You know, unemployment is the lagging indicator of any recovering economy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the last thing to come back, even after consumer goods and other aspects of the economy start to recover. So there will, I mean, I have two and a half more months to go. I will always be able to find a story, no matter.
Mm-hmm.
If I found a story in, South Dakota, where there's, their unemployment is half the national average, I think.
In South Dakota?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's, they're doing pretty good up there.
Yeah.
I'll always be able to find my story.
Why would that be? Their agricultural underpinnings, I guess.
They never had a housing bubble. They never had a real estate boom.
Mm-hmm. Static housing.
Right.
Okay.
And there's, you know, not a whole lot of manufacturing that's also dependent on a lot of the housing market. There are some signs that they may just be starting to have some problems because of natural gas. Wells are being shut down, and actually the agricultural numbers that just came out are not incredibly positive. So South Dakota may just be, again, a lagging, you know, a little bit behind the rest of the country.
As you travel across the country here, you know, in Las Vegas, it's pretty much all about us here, you know, let's face it. How do you think this region is perceived across the country? If you can speak to that at all, I have a feeling that there might be some attitude of comeuppance about Las Vegas because we've been so greedy for so long. And yeah,
we've been so sinful
and cocky, and everybody wants to see us. And all of a sudden we are not recession proof, as we long thought we were because of our great gaming industry and how strong that has always been.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Do you think people are kind of saying that that's, you know,
well, okay. It's funny that just you posing that question is based on the kind of assumption that people other places in the country would care. Remember,
they should have qualified it.
You're not the center of this country.
All I can say, I care about what happens in South Dakota.
Right.
That does matter.
No, I mean, I think a lot of the places that, not just in Las Vegas, but in Southern California, in Arizona, where there have been these massive housing bubbles, the speculation got way out of control, and the mortgage brokers were completely unregulated and just kind of, you know, handing out loans to anyone who could write their name on a piece of paper on the dotted line. I wouldn't say it's comeuppance, but it's kind of an attitude of, you really should have known better.
Yeah, maybe that's what, I think we're saying that to ourselves too.
No, I know, and that's what I found about people who've gone through that.
Probably not unique to hear either, but there's a lot of self.
There was kind of a drunkenness. I've had it described to me as, just a drunkenness on the whole free money aspect.
Yeah, and we're in hangover now. Well, Christina, we are out of time, and regretfully, we could go on for hours, I feel. Recession Road Trip. It can be found at correspondence.theatlantic.com, Christina_Davidson, correct? And fire that up, because it's well worth checking out, because you learn a lot about what's happening in this country as Christina does all the hard work for us. Thanks for coming down here, and good luck
with the
rest of the project. I'm sure I'll be checking in with you to see how everything's going.
Thank you very much.
And for all of us at Our Metropolis, this is John Katsalomitas, reminding you to stay tuned for Observations.
Thank you for joining us for Our Metropolis. Join us again next Tuesday at 6 p.m. for Our Metropolis.